Season 6, Episode 9, Grime Scene. It opens up and we're at the house. People are saying hellos and their good mornings. Danny and Kirkendall, you know. Kirkendall gets a page and she runs to her desk to call somebody. Clearly something's going on, something's up. Sorensen asks Sipowitz how the tank is. Fancy comes out of his office and says we got a stabbing at a bodega. After Fancy lets him know the information, and Kirkendall lets everybody know that his her son watched the stabbing. Fancy said, do what you gotta do, and she says, I will, and then the entire squad goes to him. Every single person goes to what's going on.
Everyone, except for Sipowitz, but everyone goes.
Sipowitz goes.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Literally the whole crew goes.
That's right.
We cut to the bodega, and there's a woman screaming in Spanish. A lot of poor case, because I think her husband is dead outside.
Yeah, I think he's under the tarp, right?
And...
because they just put a tarp over him.
Yeah, they just threw a tarp on him.
Okay.
They just threw a tarp on him, keep him fresh.
They put a tarp over most people.
She's screaming, you know, she's not having a good time. And Kyle, her son, Kirkendall's son, is in the back seat of a car.
He's having a better time.
A little bit better time.
Yeah.
He's not screaming in Spanish. And Kirkendall comes up and holds him. A camera crew tries to film it. Danny gets all up in their fucking grill. I'm going to need the last couple minutes of your tape there. He's like, that's good stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'll give you exclusives outside of my station house. And the guy's like, I don't know. And then Danny grabs his face.
I thought it was kind of funny that he said, I'm going to be on this job for a long time.
Yeah, not longer than Smitty's.
Yeah.
The only person you've done it longer than is Kelly.
Yeah.
Whisper Tough, Mr. Caruso.
Whisper Tough. Hey, what's your wrestling name? Whisper Tough.
I feel like it's important to note for 90s kids out there, Kyle, Kirkendall's son, is played by Cortland Mead.
Who's Cortland Mead?
Cortland Mead played in the 94 Little Rascals.
Oh, that's where he was. Okay.
He played
That's it.
He was also in The Shining that Stephen King actually liked that no one else did. The TV's The Shining.
Oh.
But Cortland Mead in the 94 cinematic classic Little Rascals. While Kirkendall is talking to Kyle, Danny's hassling the camera guy.
Huh? Me?
Yeah, you. You were played by Cortland Mead at one point.
Fuck Cortland Mead.
Sipowitz checks out the body, and the woman sees it and understandably screams more because it's her husband. And I don't know if you noticed this, but everybody kind of had this attitude of like, okay, geez.
I mean, I kind of felt that after a while. Like...
I kind of felt like the, hey, could you calm down?
I don't know, it's just like, what is screaming going to do at this point?
Well, I found it funny that Kyle...
What?
The character Kyle. That's going to be great the entire episode. Definitely keep doing the joke every time I say his name.
Say whose name?
No.
You mean my name?
When they go to the child, and like they're Kirkendall's comforting him because it's her son... And then the woman's, like, screaming in anguish because her husband is dead. And then they're like, oh, let's get Kyle out of here. Because this is really traumatizing.
Me? out of where?
Let's get the child out of here because this is really traumatizing for him. And it was like, that woman...
First of all, why didn't they just let that kid hang out around the crime scene? Like, I understand that someone needs to talk to him. They're waiting, but why not take him, like, a little farther away... Maybe to, like, I don't know, the back of the ambulance where you can close the door. Like, why was he just out in the open watching all this crazy shit happen? Like, he's just been traumatized.
And, like, even the uniform officer... Well, it's... I mean, this episode does raise a pretty awesome, fun question. But
what question is that?
About how, when it's their family members, we treat the entire situation differently.
Oh, well, of course. We already kind of knew that.
But
we saw that with... Russell's mom and brother.
When the uniform officer's telling him what happened, he's just like, yeah, dude got stabbed. Kid was in the store. Girlfriend was, or his babysitter was in the John. He's like, nobody else saw? He's like, nah, just the kid. And he's like so like nonchalant about it because he doesn't know that it's his child, but like the second everybody else knows that a detective's child's involved, then it changes everybody's attitude.
Yeah, moving a little bit quicker.
At the scene, Medavoy and Martinez get a DOA at a homeless camp, which they seem just stoked to go take care of. I think that's it. Oh, it's just that the DOA that they're dealing with, he was killed in the middle of a robbery, stabbed in the middle of a robbery. And his name was Miguel, I forgot to mention. Should humanize the dead dude. But other than that, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle.
Are you talking about me or the kid in the episode?
Go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue.
Cortland Finnegan, whatever his name is.
I literally said his name, like, 5 minutes ago.
I got half of it right, right?
And you went to Finnegan.
But I got half of it right, right?
Finnegan.
I think because Cortland Finnegan is a football player.
Andy Hazel. Back from the break.
What's his full name?
Cortland Mead.
Mead.
Yeah, like not beer, Finnegan.
Beer, ale. I just couldn't think Mead.
That's it.
Is it M-E-E-D or M-E-A-D?
M-E-A-D.
Interesting.
Don't put any disrespect on Cortland Mead's name, all right? He killed it as uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
In the 94 uh-huh. Rascals.
Hey, can I get a job? What can you do? Uh-huh. Sorry.
Oh,
hey,
man.
Still probably getting residues on that.
Oh, he's getting hard residues. So is Adi Trump from his...
yeah, from that, from Home Alone, from... He was on The Fresh Prince.
Yep.
Damn, we put him on everything.
Just to get through this story that's completely unnecessary. Well, it's not unnecessary, it just seems like we wasted a lot of time. After the break, we cut to Sylvia Costas, ADA, and Sergeant Bill Dornan, played by Richard Gant. Gant. But Richard is from The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, he's from a lot of things.
He's been in a lot of shit. But I know most
as... He's a good character actor.
The black cop from Big Lebowski. But once again, he was in Norbit. I don't know how I've seen it.
Are you sure it was him? And are you sure it wasn't Eddie Murphy?
Just again?
Just playing a different character. He's just so good, you got confused.
Eddie Murphy, because the movie did so poorly, just started attributing his roles to different actors without telling them. Sylvia and Bill Dornan are trying to figure out if they can get information out of a old drug dealer who is in prison about the murder. Because if you're just joining us, Sylvia is upset that she sent a dude to prison for a murder that she thinks confessed...
he may not have committed.
He confessed to it after being paid off by a different drug dealer. So yeah. They're trying to get information out of this other drug dealer that worked for the drug dealer that they think murdered.
So, I mean, I don't think we've asked this question before, mm-hmm. but why this guy?
This,
like, why?
Jermaine?
Yeah, why? No. Why is she trying to get this guy exonerated so hard? Has no one else that she's put away ever come to her and been like,
I didn't actually do this?
Yeah, and her.
But was it believable? This one actually made sense. Like, the whole story added up, and then she realized, oh, if this guy's in prison because of me, and we didn't investigate it well, and I recommended he get, like, a full...
But his whole story added up. What's his story, other than, a guy paid me to do it? How can you prove it? That, so far, from what I've got, he has no proof.
But it turns out to be true. So, I mean, I guess it was convincing.
You're missing what I'm saying.
Completely. Because what you're saying makes no fucking sense.
I'm not disagreeing that what it said he said to her ended up being true. What I'm saying is why is this the one case that she's getting such a big hard-on for someone who says, like, I'm not guilty? How there has to have been other people who have come to her and been like, hey, you put me in jail wrongfully. I have proof. And their proof be just as, like, wishy-washy as this guy's proof. But for some reason, she's jumping all over helping Suarez.
Well, I don't think it was as wishy-washy. That's the other problem, because...
Okay, then that's where we agree to disagree.
Because, I mean...
Because I don't know what's his evidence to help him before he's shanked in the shower.
And that's the reason she's onto it now, is because the dude died in prison because she didn't listen to him.
I know that. But what made her start this race so ready to go, ready to win it?
Because she obviously believed it.
Okay. Okay. I just think with what she's been told and what she's given us as the evidence to try to believe this, it doesn't make any sense.
Either way, they bring in Jermaine to talk to, because he worked the same corner where this dude died. I keep mixing all the names together.
Suarez.
Suarez is the dude who died in prison, but the dude that he claimed to kill was Gennaro Lopez, and Freddy Ascension was the dude that actually killed him.
Yeah, this is the dude that they're looking at. They're looking at Ascension.
Because this guy, Jermaine, is the dude who worked for Ascension on that corner, and they believe he saw it happen or knows what happened. Before he comes into the room, Sergeant Bill Dornan is like, don't let the sissifying fool you. He can like take care of himself.
The sissifying, yeah.
Which was the nice way of saying he's effeminate, I guess. Jermaine shows up and congrats Sergeant Dornan on the promotion. It is kind of funny how every dude we're dealing with, when they find out a cop's been promoted, they congratulate him.
Yeah, they're super cordial to them.
Like, even with Danny, where it was like, hey, tell Danny congratulations on the promotion. It's like, what? Okay.
We're all really happy for him.
Jermaine basically says, I can't tell you shit until I get to the dentist, because my upper plate has a problem. And they say, cool. And that's like the end of the scene.
Yeah, Sylvia basically hooks it up and gets him looked at so she can hurry that process along.
The next time we see them, Jermaine is appreciative for his mouth being fixed. Sylvia goes over the Suarez story again, basically to catch up people who may not be aware of the story because they're not watching it in order. Suarez was in prison for killing Gennaro Lopez. We think Freddy Ascension did it and then paid him to take the fall and then got him murdered in prison. And Jermaine goes into the story claiming basically Freddy did kill Gennaro Lopez on the corner, over a dispute over when the night ends and the morning begins. Because as we know,
that's interesting.
Drug dealers, they got territories. And apparently those territories also have business hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, this dispute was just over when business hours begin and end. And when there's disputes, there's just murder.
It needs to be specific times.
But, not to be that dude, but do drug dealers, like, they don't have punch clocks. Like, they're not sitting there with time cards.
Maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe if they're a legit operation, they need to have lunch times.
Hey, if they had dental, Jermaine wouldn't need to go see a dentist.
Well, if they had dental, Jermaine wouldn't be in jail.
But Jermaine essentially confirms her suspicions. Freddy Ascension killed the dude, paid the guy, then killed him in prison because he didn't want to pay his wife, just wanted to bang her outside of prison. It ends with Dornan being like, give us somebody we can flip. And Jermaine basically says, Tommy Ibarra, if you give him someone cute, he'll exchange sex for cheap dope. And I was like, damn, okay, Tommy.
Yeah, pretty straightforward.
And then he compliments Dornan on his suit, which is apparently too gay for Dornan. Little too gay for Dornan.
Well, you know, because it's coming from a gay man, so there's extra gay coming at him. You know, there's extra homosexuality coming in that statement.
And he didn't order this hot dog with extra gay. So he would prefer no extra gay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of burn through that. There's one more about that story that's completely useless scene. But I thought Jermaine did a great job.
No, Jermaine was great.
Like, that character was, like, really, really good.
For the character that he's portraying, he did a really good job being that person.
He was playing an effeminate man who was a drug dealer, but there was still, like, this kind of sense of, like, but I don't want to fuck with this dude. Like,
yeah.
Like, he's like, sure, he's you know, homosexual now, maybe, quote-unquote, sissified. But he also had this thing behind him where he said, if you cop to a murder, you better be willing to murder to defend yourself. And it was like, that sounds like something from experience.
Yeah. Like, sounds something a little too hardcore for me.
So it was a, he was a good job. I just wanted to give him a shout out. It was played by Gregory Miller.
Gregory Miller. Oh, is that the guy you couldn't remember his name?
I couldn't. Yeah, I didn't write it down. But his best known for, he was in Lethal Weapon 3. Anyways, that story ends with a really dumb scene, I think, where Sibowitz is asleep in Sylvia's office, and then Dornan and Sylvia come in just to run everything by Sibowitz that they've already talked about.
Now, are they there to run it by Sibowitz, or are they just, like, checking in with Sibowitz?
But that's what it is. It's just, Sibowitz is like, oh, so did he go for it? He's like, yeah, he went for both murders. He's like, do we got somebody to flip? Yeah, we got a name. And it's like, is he already in custody? He's like, no, we got to put him in custody. That's the end of the scene. Like, it really didn't need to exist, it seems. And it was just a moment for Sipowitz to be kind of sloppy looking, and Dornan to be like, hey, fix your shit. You're a grown man.
Like, no, I mean, yeah.
It wasn't like a needed scene at all.
I guess I never really looked at it. Or looked at it that way, that they just came in and explained everything to Sipowitz, but he has really no need to be there. Because he wasn't really helping them.
No, and we'll get to the scene where he leaves the investigation there on to go to Sylvia. He's like, I got a commitment with Sylvia. It's like, you have a commitment to fall asleep in her office and then get told what happened? Like, you didn't do anything.
That's true, yeah. Like, what?
He didn't do a thing.
Unless he was just there for moral support. That's the only thing I can think of.
The only other thing I could think of is he expected them to be done earlier because they had to wait for Germaine to go to the dentist.
Okay.
So he expected to meet them there as they were finishing. But what would they go over? Like, what would they even do? Like,
yeah, that's what doesn't make sense. Is like, yeah, you're right. Why is he even there?
The whole story about Suarez, Gennaro, Lopez, and Freddy Ascension, which I love the way Germaine said Freddy Ascension. He's like, Freddy Ascension. And I was like, that's funny.
Freddy Ascension.
Germaine killed it. He's the MVP of the episode. Anyway.
MVP, I don't know about that, but
he's
pretty good in the episode.
You know who wasn't? Cortland Mead. Go back to Cortland. So yeah, that scene doesn't even need to exist.
It doesn't. Yeah, you're right. It's Viller.
It's basically just to set up, hey, we're going to be talking about the Suarez case even more in the future. With Bill Dornan, Sipowitz, and Sylvia. The three amigos.
Yeah, and Sipowitz is going to be an important factor in it, too.
And, even though
he doesn't need to be.
He doesn't need to be there at all. The other case, which is also basically filler and completely useless, Medavoy and Martinez go to a homeless camp. Yeah. They find a dead dude in a like a mail carrier bin.
Yeah.
Who has his head smashed in with a 2x4. It's pretty gory from what we saw. Basically.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Head smashed with a 2x4. They mention that he clearly was moved into it. One of the two homeless dudes that found him say that his name's Vic. He had been poaching can routes, which the homeless guys use to go get cans, get some money.
Yeah, he didn't respect the
can routes.
The can routes, yeah. We're getting pissed off.
One of the homeless men, played by EJ Callahan, he's been in a ton of shit, this EJ Callahan.
Are you sure you're pronouncing that right? And it's not DJ Khaled?
No, it's not DJ Khaled, surprising.
He's a dude from Superbad, right?
No. That's a different guy. We're going to get to that guy. EJ Callahan's the guy that does the Saddam joke.
Okay.
He's a dude that's like, he has been in everything. He was even in an episode of Community for half a second. He was if you remember the episode where they have the memories, or the flashback episode to episodes that never existed, he was the dude in the long underwear that shot when Troy and Abed were running out of, like, a saloon.
Oh, yeah, he's that older guy.
He's been a character actor forever, and he's been in basically everything.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, he made the joke, like, he did the same thing Saddam Hussein. When you move in on your neighbors, the eagle comes in and craps on your shoulder, some weird bullshit. Medavoy and Martinez start just basically accusing any homeless dude that talks to them because yeah. they said he had beef with everybody. Like, so did you kill him? Like, they want to get out of here by 5. Like, it's pretty clear.
Well, dude, most important thing is helping Kirkendall catch that stabbing so Kyle's okay.
Another homeless man tells Medavoy, like, hey, I got some info, but the money situation's pretty bad. So then Medavoy gives him some money, says, I'll give you more if you're right. And he points to Ed. And Ed is playing possum asleep on a couch. And when they go to talk to Ed, they mention that he was a character in a previous episode of NYPD Blue. He was the cough syrup head.
Mm-hmm.
To talk about the quality of cases. He was the cough syrup head that let him know that a prostitute was banging dudes underneath a bodega before they robbed him.
Yes.
That dude, Ed, was played by Clement Blake, who is the homeless dude from Superbad.
Yes.
Apparently he found his niche, which is crazy homeless dude.
But he also ends up being in a lot of those,
He is in Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, he's in Freaks and Geeks, yeah, he plays the friend of Franco's cousin, and he's in a lot of Judd Apatow stuff randomly, too.
Does a good job. He does a very good job of being a homeless cough syrup head. They force him to wake up, and he's covered in his own blood, which they find out is his own blood. He admits that there's bad blood between him and the DOA, but no more than anybody else. Medavoy and Martinez get him up to talk to him at the station house. And there was a pretty funny moment, at least I thought so. Medavoy steps in dog crap.
Yeah.
And he's like, gum and dog crap. Ugh. And then Ed goes, yeah, the dog crap here is terrible. As if, like, dog crap anywhere else.
It's totally fine, yeah. I step in dog crap up in the Upper West Side. It's totally cool.
The next scene they have with Ed, they're interrogating him. They bring up the cough syrup. He says he's got chronic bronchitis. I also really like Clement Blake, Ed, in this episode, because they actually humanize him a little more, because they're like, you got a lot of blood on you. And he's like, yeah, people hit on me.
Yeah.
And he's like, you get hit on often? He's like, yeah, people beat on me. What are you going to do? And it was like, well, that's pretty fucking sad. And of course, they're just going at him more and more, which makes it even worse. The quote I have is, many people beat on me. And then Ed literally falls asleep in the middle of being yelled at, which is also pretty funny.
Yeah, because he's probably coming down off of either drugs or alcohol, too, from being up all night living in a homeless camp.
He tells them, like, yeah, last night I was hanging out at a barrel fire near a certain garage. I forget what. He gives off a very specific location. And they try to interrogate it out of him, like, if you don't tell us what's going on, and then the evidence says, you'll get a chance for remorse. And he just falls asleep. And Medavoy and Martinez just resort to pulling the sweater off of him as he's asleep in the chair. And he falls on the ground, and they just basically leave him there. Which is, like, cool.
Yeah.
Alright.
And are they allowed to take his jacket without, like...
Apparently, if you homeless...
A warrant or evidence?
It's all good. The next time we see Medavoy and Martinez, Medavoy's on the phone with a mystery lady at first. And he's upset because she couldn't give her notice. And Martinez walks up and says, hey, bad news, the blood on his jacket doesn't match the DOA's. And then Medavoy gets all tapped because he's like, good, now we get to hang out with 50 lice-infected bums.
Well, like you said, he's already pissed off because he stepped in dog shit, so...
And his girlfriend didn't quit her job, which apparently is very important.
Which is so weird that she has to quit her job.
Martinez then goes Abby... Which, who the fuck is this? Turns out Medavoy's got himself a lady friend. Haven't mentioned, didn't
yeah.
know. And never mentioned in a previous episode, up until now.
That's right.
It's not... Oh, Annie, not Abby. Abby's the woman that he put a baby in. Annie is this new woman.
Uh-huh.
He's like, yeah, she couldn't give her notice. Her boss is laid up. I want him to get laid up by a bus. Wishing death on another person, as a cop. And...
Does he say why he wants her to quit her job?
Not really. Apparently it's causing friction in their relationship, which, as far as I'm concerned, as the man in a relationship, if your job is causing problems, get rid of it. And then, in probably the biggest case of fuckery I've seen in an NYPD Blue episode so far. The next scene with them, they're talking about how they're going to have to go out to this homeless camp and talk to guys in the nighttime. And they're pissed. And Martinez is like, I don't like the embers. I don't like the embers getting in your eyes. And then Medavoy's like, yeah, we're going to be talking to wet brains. We're going to be talking to the Skeksis, the scum of the earth.
The embers?
And then a dude just walks in. Because there's no PAA. We don't have Dolores. We'll get to that in a minute, too. Dolores is not there. A dude just walks in, walks by the little divider, and they go like, hey, bro, just stay right there. The guy starts, like, looking for flies and shit. Like, he's obviously not right in the head. And he's like, what can we do for you? And he goes, knife. And they're all like, okay. And they start patting him down, and they've cleared him.
Uh-huh.
Martinez didn't give him an ocular pat down, gave him a real one.
If Mac was there, they just need the ocular and they can move on.
And then he's like, what's going on? And the dude just admits to murdering their DOA. Walked into the precinct that he needed to, up to the detectives he needed to speak to.
All while being crazy.
And told him he murdered a dude.
All while being crazy.
And all they did was like, he's like, yeah, he threw my knife away. So I threw him in the thing. Which shoulder? And like, you lift him up on which shoulder? And then they look and he's got blood on that shoulder. And he's like, did you hit him with anything? Yeah, good piece of 2x4. It was like, what? The dude just walked in? It made me want to, like, call up Bill Clark, the supervisor who was a New York detective. Did this ever fucking happen?
I was saying, does shit like that happen all the time or something that we don't know about?
Now, keep in mind, that dude walked past the check-in desk.
With the sergeant there.
With the sergeant, and usually maybe like 6 to 12 police officers, on average, walking through that entrance. That dude just walked up the stairs, walked into...
And no one said a word to him.
No one said anything. Or even less likely... The sergeant saw that guy. He's like, hey, what are you here for? Knife? Okay, go to the detective precinct. Second floor. Like, what happened?
And he's crazy.
Yeah, he asked for the mind salvation. Where do you keep the magnet for the mind salvation?
Yeah, and he's a lunatic. And he didn't... Yeah, that's interesting.
And then they just bring him into a room and get him to confess. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, this is one of those cases that falls into their lap.
It also seemed like one of those things where they were like, okay, well, we need to set up Annie, and we need to set up why Medavoy and Martinez are going to be at this bar with Danny and Russell later. Let's just say the dude walked in. Huh? Out by five? Let's just say the dude walked in.
Yeah. What reason? No reason. Just walked in.
just, he walks in. Crazy guy. Crazy guy killed the dude. And that was it. That's the end of that story.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. But they do that a lot, though. Random things like that will happen. People just walk in, and they'll solve things.
Well, usually, the one that even kind of raises an eyebrow, it raised our eyebrows occasionally, even so far watching the show, is when a guy comes in and is like, so I got a parishioner.
Yeah.
He's downstairs. He says he hurt somebody. I think it might be related to your case. And even then, we're like, oh, so a murderer went to church and admitted to murdering somebody? Or like a family member is like, so my brother, I think he's involved with the thing. But this one is like a crazy dude who clearly isn't stable enough to exist in normal society without some kind of support.
True.
He rolls into the place he needs to go.
And the other thing is like, and like, you're not supposed to judge people by how they look, what they're wearing, but he looks like a legit homeless person.
Yeah. He didn't look like a guy who had it all together and turned out to be homeless.
He also didn't look like a guy who didn't have business in a police precinct. Like, it was, and like, it didn't look like he was there because someone called him in because he had to get there. Do you know what I mean?
Because, I mean, we could talk about this forever, really, because all of the things about it make no sense. Because even if a dude came in, like, wearing a suit, or, like, not even a suit, wearing regular clothes,
mm-hmm.
walked in, is like, hey, I need to speak to a detective. Okay, well, we have no PAA, and we're the only people here. What do you need? And he goes, I'd like to admit that I murdered a man. And then they're like, excuse me? He's like, yeah, a homeless dude accosted me. We got into an argument. I beat him with a 2x4 and put him in the thing. That, to me, adds up way more than a crazy dude walked through the entire precinct.
Yeah.
Exactly to the dude he needed to talk to. Who just... It's almost like he was summoned because the cops were complaining that they had to go out. It's like, oh, I don't want to ruin your day. I did it.
Very weird that he just walks in and admits to it. And then, like, that's it.
That's it. We're done with the case. Okay. Do we go over the Dolores of it all? We mentioned her.
Yeah, I feel like you have to keep the... Because you can't just, like, randomly mention. Be done with it. Yeah.
So Dolores, in the middle of this fucking episode, like, right in the dead center almost, Dolores and John, best PAA ever, are sitting in John's office, ? Not 100% sure where he is. It's clearly above the detective station.
Uh-huh.
Because she says downstairs.
Oh, I think because John is the PAA on the third floor.
Anti-crime?
Yeah, they always mention anti-crime. I think that's where John is located.
So John and Dolores are sitting in a office. John is clearly, you know, anxious. And he says, Dolores, you know, whatever explanation you have, it's not really going to cover the fact that you're this late.
Yeah.
And she's like, I want things understood downstairs. And he's like, what are you talking about? This isn't the time to make demands. If you want to keep your job, you have to, like, show some effort. You gotta go into work. She's like, I don't want anybody looking down their nose at me, treating me like a virus specimen. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, she's like, she's slowly losing it. She's slowly losing it. It's kind of weird. Because it's like, she's displaying all of these weird behaviors, but like, what's, like, why?
Then she goes full middle school, and she goes, you know what? Just write yes. Just tell him to write yes or no.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sorry, is this a dude you like, or your fucking employer and you're an adult?
Yeah, that was like, that was also the crazy thing is, like, she then turns it into, like, circle. Like,
yes, circle, no, maybe. Yes, no,
maybe.
And John is such a nice dude as a character. He doesn't go, hey, bitch, what the fuck are you talking about?
Like, what's going on here?
He instead is like, what? No, I'm not going to do this. And then she's like, some friend you are. And he's like, you called me.
Yeah, you asked me for your help. I'm just, yeah, no. I'm with you on it.
Someone's calling you pretending to be me. He's like, yeah, three nights. Saying that they're doing things they don't want to do and they want to keep their job. That's why you're here. And he's like, you better change your number, John. You want to make a paper airplane? And it's like, why does John even give a fuck about her right now? He should just be like, go away. We're done. And she just bounces, and John says, I'm not changing my number. And I was like, that was pretty, that's a good button.
John's too nice of a dude. That's the biggest issue.
So yeah, that was in the middle of the episode. Not mentioned before. Nothing mentioned about it before. Nothing afterwards. Just that happens with Dolores.
Well, I mean, you can take a minute. Don't even cut this out if you want, but, like, they're setting up something.
Yeah, it's pretty clear she must be out the door, because if you're fancy, why would you ever fucking put up with us? It's not even like she's, like, the star detective. Like, Sipowicz, he dealt with the fact he was a drunk, because I think Fancy knew he could, like, kind of control it for a little while, and then it got out of control, and then he got better, Sipowicz. But this woman just answers the phone calls, does the filing. I can get another person to do your job.
Yeah, and especially after the last episode when, like, she came to work but didn't even talk to him or check in with him. Like, I mean, is this the next day?
Or next week?
Yeah, and has she not come to work all week? has she been coming in? Like, you know, it's really funny. Like, where's this anger coming from?
And even John says in the discussion, Fancy would have fired you if he didn't think he could work this out. And it's like, if Fancy knew, like, if John told Fancy, hey, so she pulled this shit, he'd be like, she's done. She's not coming back here.
Yeah, 100%.
All her shit is going to be in a box at the desk. I don't want to see her again.
Yeah, he would have just called the temp agency or whatever and gotten a new PAA.
Yeah, Dolores is probably leaving. I mean, it's kind of a spoiler. Is it a spoiler? But, I mean, she's probably leaving.
I mean, the way they're setting it up, it's like she wants to leave.
Anyway, the big story. Why we're all here. Kyle Kirkendall.
Still needs help.
The next scene we have with Kyle after the intro, Kyle runs down exactly what happened in the bodega. Says that he's with the babysitter, took him to the doctor for an ear infection, she went into the bathroom, he watched the dude stab the man behind the counter before the guy even got his lottery tickets and all the money, and described the dude very well, white guy, about his dad's height, and a couple years younger than his dad. What I didn't like, the boy used the word lavatory. Why would a child that young use the word lavatory? Seemed very weird.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very weird move.
And then he ends his whole story. Kirkendall is sitting next to him. He's telling the story to Russell. Is that a conflict of interest? Most likely.
100%.
Did a little Cactus Jack there.
Yeah. 100% a conflict of interest.
He tells Russell to her face, I could recognize the guy again, which Jill Kirkendall looks over and goes, no.
Yeah. yeah, she shut that down real quick.
They come out of the room, and Fancy, Danny, and Sipowitz are out there. Russell and Kirkendall let him know. Well, Russell lets him know first. Like, he has a general description. And he's like, so, not a good description? He's like, he has a general description. I think Fancy knows they're lying out their ass. Like, pretty much. I think Fancy's a decent enough detective himself to know, like, they're lying to me. Because it's her son. When Kirkendall comes out, she asks, do we have anybody else, any other witnesses?
Mm-hmm.
And Fancy says, we're canvassing, but we don't really have anything yet. And she said, so nothing.
I understand that she's getting, like, nervous.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense.
But, like, I feel like she doesn't take the time to think, like, when I'm a cop and people act like the way I'm acting, I hate it. But what do I know?
Yeah, that's the point I'm going to get to. In a very specific moment with Jill Kirkendall, I'm going to get to it. Because she says something that I was like, yeah, so why don't you have the same empathy when you're doing your job every day? Anyway.
Right? Exactly. It's like the things that you are getting frustrated with, that's what you do all the time.
Daily.
Like, and you don't want them to do to you, but you keep getting pissed off about it. Yeah, no,
100%. Danny is clearly very concerned. Like, that's what they're showing in this episode. Danny is, like, kind of hovering, being very concerned, asking questions.
Like, a little too much.
He's like, does he want a soda? And Jill Kirkendall's like, I gotta use the John, I'm gonna get him one after. She goes to the bathroom, Russell goes after her. Danny's like, I'm gonna go cut the babysitter loose because the babysitter knows jack shit. And then Sipowitz, as he's leaving, the conversation goes, dumbass DOA doesn't have surveillance. And I was like, yeah, well, he's dead, so let's insult him some more.
Yeah, let's be rude to the dead.
Hey, you know what? Call up his wife and tell her that while she's screaming poor Kay on the street. Yeah, well, it's his fault. He doesn't have surveillance.
Your dumbass dead husband's fault. I could catch his killer if your dumbass dead husband didn't have shitty surveillance.
They cut to the bathroom. Jill's in the bathroom giving her her Emmy performance, where she's upset because she's saying,
is that bastard going to make him testify?
I don't want to see him in a courtroom at the grand jury, then at a trial hearing, then at the trial, going over this over and over again after he has to live with those memories the rest of his life. Because it's pretty dark. He did watch a dude get stabbed in the chest and then try to crawl outside and then die. So, you know, not good news. Like, not great news, period.
That's not the best start to your morning.
Like, some like Folgers.
When you go to the bodega to get a bacon, egg, and cheese, you know, And with the salt, pepper, ketchup. You're hoping it's ketchup and not like a little blood. You're not hoping for that, man.
Getting a coffee?
Yeah.
What were we even talking about?
Kirkendall was giving her Emmy performance in the bathroom.
Yeah, she's giving her Emmy performance. And, you know, it's a good point. She doesn't want her son to be dragged through an entire thing.
Yeah.
And then Russell, because she watched her boyfriend do this, he's like, we could just walk him right out of here. He has nothing connected to this case. We don't even write down his name. And then Kirkendall's like, I want the case made.
Yeah. Because deep down inside, she doesn't give that much shit about her kids. She wants the case made instead.
Russell reassures her that they'll get a confession. Like, they'll figure it out. Russell leaves the bathroom and she runs into Danny. And then Danny's like, how's she doing? He's like, well, she's very worried. He's like, she's supposed to be worried. And he's like, we need a confession. She's like, yeah, confession will be good. He's like, yeah, we need this asshole to confess. Like, he might as well put on sunglasses after he said it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's on a mission for some reason. He's like, well, he has a soft spot for kids, but...
Sipowicz, Sorensen, and Russell, the next scene, are checking stick-up patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find some type of pattern. They show an example that they're not really getting anywhere. And then Fancy's like, I gotta run away. Not a runaway. I gotta hit and run a couple blocks from your crime scene. Might want to check him out. His name is John Falcone. And Sipowicz looks at his watch. He's like, I got 7 minutes till a commitment with Sylvia to fall asleep in her office.
Yeah, I gotta go.
Russell and Sorensen's like, Diane and me can take care of it. It's Diane and I. And
I'm a wordsmith, Kirk.
And there's this apprehension, because as we know, Russell, a little apprehensive towards Sorensen because she married the last guy in that seat,
mm-hmm.
who then died. And she says, okay. And they go to pick up John Falcone. And I thought John Falcone did a good job, but it highlighted something for me that is going to offend some people from the New York area. Their accent is a little cartoonish. The New York accent sometimes is a little out there. Because people make fun of Southern California. It's like, yeah... But you understand what I'm saying. You don't have to, like, slow it down and change the pitch to understand the words coming out of your mouth. John Falcone is very stereotypical New York.
Yeah. I'm no argument here. Because,
I mean, you lived in New York, and people can tell you're from Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And half the time I want to be like, why? Because you understand what I'm saying the first time? Or
well, people say that, I think I've said this before, they say that I talk with an accent. And I'm like, what's the accent? It's like, oh, maybe it's not really an accent. You just talk slower.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you mean like just at a pace that everyone can understand and hear? And there's no need to be screaming and yelling and like going quickly for no reason.
But yeah, this John Falcone dude, he comes in. He admits to hitting the woman, and he's like, yeah, I shouldn't have done that.
My bad.
And Russell's giving him some serious face, some stank face, like he farted. And Sorensen, they start asking, like, where were you alone? He's like, no, I was with my buddy Vince. Like, who's Vince? And he's like, well, why does it matter? And then he slowly finds out, oh, Vince robbed the store that he went to.
Uh-huh.
And then Vince killed a guy. And once he figures that out, he folds so fast. Because... Danny's like, do you know what acting in concert means? It means if there's a robbery and you're the wheel man, you did the robbery. And if there's a murder in that robbery, he's like, murder? What? I have no idea.
He starts freaking out.
And he also starts putting it together. He did a decent job, really, because Vince then, like, his character realizes, like, oh, Vince was acting weird when we were driving because he told me to run the red light for no reason whatsoever.
I like this part of NYPD Blue when they do things like this and they explain the story but without like showing you what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
They do it through what the guy explains. I like how they do that.
NYPD Blue is at its best, in my opinion, when they bring in a character who maybe isn't the murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get information out of him, it reveals a little bit of humanity out of that character. Who really has nothing to do with what they're dealing with. Like, another good example was the one with Terrence Howard where the woman killed her own kid and then buried him in the woods.
Yeah.
And they had to talk to her sister. And this woman has nothing to do with what actually happened except that her sister borrowed her car. And Sipowicz has to go hard at her just to get her to, like, open up about something.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's really good shit. Like, that's top tier stuff. And with this guy, it kind of does the same thing, where it's just like, look, man, I was just driving my buddy. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah,
this is all new to me.
The next scene, they bring in Vince. And Vince kind of looks like DJ Qualls. Am I the only one that thought that?
A little bit. Okay. A little bit. I know who DJ Qualls is, but I know he looked like somebody, but now that you say it, 100%.
He kind of has the DJ Qualls vibe. And they bring him in because they say, like, oh, well, the woman that your buddy hit while you were driving with him, she's turned into a ball buster, and we need corroboration about what happened. And they then ask, like, oh, he said you were fired today. It's like, yeah. It's going to affect your probation. And the guy's like, no, I don't think it will. And then Danny's like, ah, who'd you pee on, Mother Teresa?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the guy gets a little pissy with him. He's like, that's not your problem, is it? And
then Danny, your business.
And then Danny turns into, you know, what we wish was Jimmy Smith's, when Jimmy Smith would go hard on somebody. Because, no offense,
yeah.
Except all offense, because the dude's an asshole. Sorensen, when he looks angry, just looks like a kid doing a tantrum. He kind of looks like a child given a tantrum.
Yeah, there's no, like, I don't feel there's a threat there.
Also, I thought to myself recently, his face is simultaneously very young and very old at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. He does look like an old man.
He looks like an old baby. He's like Benjamin Button.
Yes.
Because he has wrinkles, and when his face gets stern, you see all the wrinkles, but it's so clear.
Your little boss baby.
It's so clear. It's so clear and youthful. It seems innocent. And then when he starts screaming, you're like, oh, did we take away Yo Baba? But he gets into this dude's face and, like, account for your day. If I tell you to account for your day, you account for your day. They then trick him a little bit. It's a good interview, too, because the guy, he's like, yeah, I went into the store, got some smokes. He's like, so you didn't rob and kill that guy? He's like, look, if my buddy said that, he didn't see anything. Which is classic, hey, you murdered somebody.
Yeah.
It's a classic, you murdered the dude. And then he's like, well, a couple saw you. I was like, there was no couple in that store. Because the dude knows who was in the store. Because he saw the kid and pointed at him. That's what Cortland Mead said.
Uh-huh.
So Danny uses the kid, even though clearly they didn't want to. And it kind of throws Russell off the game. But Danny uses the kid and says, it's your lucky day that we don't want that kid to testify. Because if you admit to this murder, we'll go to bat for you. We'll go to court. We'll go with your story that the dude provoked you into stabbing him in the chest. Don't know how that's going to work out. If you don't, and you make that kid testify, we'll just call in every favor we can to make this execution case. The dude looks at him and looks up at Danny and says, my life stinks. Which is, like, interesting response.
This is the way we're going, but okay.
From the day I was born to today, my life stinks. And then it's implied that he gave it up to Danny and Russell. But what was weird, and we mentioned it a little earlier, but I don't know if that's going to be in this episode. The show really depends on the criminals not being very smart.
A little bit, yeah.
Because who in their right mind, who has, like, basic logic, thinks that these detectives are going to come to court for you and go, hey, you know what? As a cop, you know, he really needs some leniency because he stabbed that dude because the guy insulted him.
But not only come for you, but also come and, like, defend you in a murder.
Because what they said to get him to convince him that they'll help him is like, well, what if there's provocation? We know that anytime a guy shows a knife, it's just to show that the dude is serious. But if the teller tells you to shove it up his ass, that puts it in a new light. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't at all. Not at all.
The next scene with them is one of those classic NYPD Blue no dialogue music scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Where Kirkendall is watching over Kyle in the crib.
Danny comes in
with Russell and
doesn't have to testify.
Yeah, and they give her a nod. Russell and Kirkendall do a hug over the body of the child.
Yeah.
And Danny just kind of stands in the corner, and then he just leaves and closes the door.
Like a creep.
Like, this is a private moment. We skipped a whole scene.
And then they go to a bar.
But before all of that happens, this is the scene I wanted to talk about. Kirkendall is on the phone with her other kid. And yeah. She's pulling a Walter White where he's crying on the phone. But he has to pretend like everything's cool.
Yeah.
Saying like, I have to be here for your brother because he's scared. And I know you're scared too. I don't want you down here. I'll be coming back to you as soon as I can. I love you, son. Big kiss on your account. She wipes away the tears, picks up her coffee, goes to her son Kyle, and Leo, another DA.
Assistant DA.
Opens the door to look in, and Kirkendall's like, hey, what the fuck are you doing, dog? And he's like, Leo, what are you doing? Gets in between him and her son, and Leo is concerned.
Yeah, he comes down as, like, just a dude, and she freaks out, thinking he's coming down as an attorney.
He says, like, do you think I'd look to hurt Kyle? And she says, the system doesn't mean to hurt anybody. And as she said it, and then Leo kind of, like, realizes what she means, I was like, how many times in NYPD Blue, just so far, have we had people that were witnesses that were intimidated or, like, nearly murdered? Had family members, like, not badgered, but, like, urged into giving up their kids? Giving up their family members?
And, the system is not made, and the system is made to screw people over. You should know this as a cop. Like.
and then she looks at Leo, and she says, I have to trust my own on this one. And goes in to talk to her kid. And it was like, he's been inside you, though. We saw him get all up on your titties. Like, you let him into your,
doesn't matter anymore.
Your vagina. And now you can't trust this guy because he might get his lawyer stink all over your son. Even though when it benefits your case, you'll throw lawyer stink all over anybody's son or family member. You'll convince a woman to give up her son. Because this is the same woman, a little deep cut if you've been listening to the podcast and watching the show. This is also the same detective that when, what was his name, Eddie the Fly, he murdered some people at an ATM to get, like, drugs. She's the detective to talk to the mother, because she's the only mother in the department, to be like, look, you know, you have to give up your son. And then she's like, can I see him? Yeah, you'll see him. And then when he gets into custody, she's like, hey, look, there's your son. Now get the fuck out of here. Like, it was like, yeah, hey, everybody, that's her son. Now badger him into confessing. And then just, like, bounced.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
I was
yeah.
like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that one scene, I was like, whole lot of interesting standards going on here.
Yeah.
And the doubling
double,
of them.
Yeah, double standards for sure.
But, it's fine, because they got the confession out of the dude, so he doesn't have to testify.
That's all they needed.
That's all they needed. Now, the end of the episode is interesting. Medavoy, Martinez, Danny, and Russell. Sorensen and Russell, if I'm doing last names. They're at a bar. Medavoy is talking to Annie, I guess, on the phone. Martinez and Sorensen and Russell are, you know, making conversation and drinking. Medavoy comes over to bring glad tidings that him and his girlfriend are going to be fucking later, I guess.
Yeah, they're going to be hanging out.
And he's like, I got to go talk to her. And for some reason, like, touches Russell twice.
Yeah.
Noticed it the first time, noticed it the second time, and noted it. Touches her twice. Then James is like, I'm going to use the bathroom. And grabs Russell's hand. What the fuck? Why is everybody touching Russell? Like, I'm like, what?
Is it the first time she's been out with them since Bobby died?
Yeah, but why?
That's why. They're probably just happy that she came.
But why you gotta be touching people? Why, like, we're not a very touchy-feely group, our family. And I guess that might be it, but it was just like, why are you touching? Why is everybody touching people?
I didn't even notice it, to be honest with you.
I was like, it was driving me crazy. Martinez goes to the bathroom. Danny and Russell kind of, like, pat each other on the back for taking care of that case. Mm-hmm. Even Martinez is like, I bet Jill was very grateful to you guys. Mm-hmm. And then the waiter, or waitress, wait staff, brings over three beers and a soda. Because one of those beers was for Medavoy. The soda is for Russell, because she's a recovering alcoholic.
And it's Martinez and Danny.
And Danny, who doesn't know much about Russell, says Medavoy left one at the fort. And Russell kind of like puts her hand on the beer in a weird, awkward way. And he says, waste not, want not. And Russell eventually just leaves the beer there and starts drinking her soda. Martinez comes back and complains about something in the bathroom. This is like a dumb joke. The next scene, Danny and James, Martinez and Sorensen, are outside, and James is like talking about art, and clearly a little tipsy. It seemed like, and I may be wrong, it seemed like James was like, let's go party.
I don't think it was that. I think James was just drunk, and then I think they were like getting ready to go home.
It seemed like he was like, okay, well, match my energy.
No, I think he wanted to match the energy, but I don't think he necessarily wanted to go party more. I think he was just really drunk, that's all.
Danny tricks him before he leaves. He's like, hey, you got the roster, you have the squad roster in your Casio? And I was like, what the fuck is this dude talking about? Because it's the 90s. And a Casio, I guess, was just like a portable phone book.
Pocket planner thing.
Like, yeah, like...
It's like basically a phone with... It was a phone, basically an iPhone without a phone, the phone capability.
It was an iPhone without the ability to do everything you've ever wanted to do at one time. So, he's like, let me just grab it. I want Andy's number, let me just grab it. Which was a trick to get Russell's number.
Yeah.
Martinez is like, what, you think something's wrong with my manual dexterity? Danny gets the number, almost like with fucking photographic memory. Because he looks at that Casio for all of 5 seconds and memorize the number.
Well, I mean, he's a police officer. He has to memorize numbers and things pretty quickly.
That adds up. So Sorensen and Martinez say their goodbyes. Martinez makes a comment like, oh, the Iron Curtain comes down. So like, oh, apparently Gina, you know, apparently the fires have gone down.
He has to get home by a certain time.
Now that you have a child and we're never going to see that actress again, now she can be a big old bitch, I guess.
You don't have to like her anymore. She's not on screen.
Danny goes to a payphone and tries to call Russell. He starts talking to himself because it's a television show and you can't reveal his inner thoughts. It's not a book. So clearly he's trying to call Russell to ask what was up with the weirdness with the beer.
He's trying to hype himself up.
He did ask James about her drinking, and James is like, no, we never talked about it. We never talked about it. Which is weird. She had that big of a problem, and literally only two people in that department knew about it. Sifowitz and Simone.
Yep. She kept it from everybody.
So Danny tries to call her. He gets a voice message, so then he walks home. Then the last scene of the episode is Russell buying a bottle of booze.
Vodka? Looked like clear.
It was clear. Don't know exactly what it was, but it was a clear bottle of booze. And that's the end. Looks like Russell's going to be jumping off that wagon.
Yeah, what's about to happen?
Anything else about this episode? I mean, we kind of went over everything.
No, there's just a lot of stuff that, like, is really quick and doesn't make sense. I guess because, like, again, they're setting things up. Like, this is a setup episode. They're basically just setting things up down the road. They're ending, like, relationships, Cohen and Kirkendall are kind of ending it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They're making the Suarez. They're showing you the Suarez case is going to be something. Then they're showing you that this Lawrence and Russell thing is going to start to be something. And then Russell drinking. So it's like a setup episode.
It also highlights that maybe we don't need to see the romantic partners of Medavoy and Martinez anymore.
It sets that up for the most part. Yeah.
Because he mentions a character that apparently they've been together a while, but we've never heard of them. Annie and Medavoy. And then Martinez mentions his wife, which we really haven't talked about.
Since she left.
And she's not talked about in any way that makes it seem like she's going to be around.
Yeah, she's mentioned of her. Yeah, no, that's interesting.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, where you find a podcast, including Podbean, and you can rate it there. We're on Instagram @AsherBrothersPodcast. We're on Twitter @AsherBrosPod. And that's it. Have a good one.
Yeah.
Thanks again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It's how it gets seen in the algorithm. And more importantly, we might get more people watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. You can find the show on Hulu currently, but it's important to note they only have the syndication edit, so the special long episodes will not be special and long, and they'll be edited in weird ways. And I also heard a rumor that it's not on Amazon anymore, even if you've bought them. I don't know what the deal is. I hope they get that fixed soon. You can also get the DVDs in America. I know it's harder in other countries. I apologize. I wish it was easier for you. If you need more information about NYPD Blue in your life, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles about the show. And Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. There's so much stuff out there if you just need more blue in your life. Thanks again. Please get vaccinated or wear a mask if you can't. Let's get this thing over with so we can go back outside again. Have a good one. Peace.